White Party Line.
Welcome to another episode of the Sci-Fi Party Line podcast. This is your hostess, Kat, and today I have with me Carl.
What's happening, Kat?
Hey, hey, we got it going again. We're back, baby. Yeah, okay. And I
that, by the way, was totally natural. I just want you to know. That flowed so well.
Yeah, you know, next time, just flow with it a little bit more. I know, you know, you're kind of rusty, Carl, but you could have backed me up there, sir. Eric has joined us again today. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
You know, us and the listeners would love to thank you for keeping up with our Twitter feed and Facebook and Tumblr and all the other stuff that you do. So thank you for doing that, sir.
Oh, you're welcome. It's no trouble.
Okay. And guess what we're going to discuss today, guys? Star Trek Into Darkness.
Finally. We waited a very long time for this.
Yeah, I've actually been pining since 2009 to get on SFPL to talk about Star Trek.
And tell us why.
Why? I don't know. I don't know. I got skipped in the order way back when.
No, this is your reason. We got something really wrong, and we were talking about something, and nobody knew what they were talking about, and you were like screaming at your iPod.
Well, yeah, I was more of a listener at that point in the SFPL canon.
No, I think you were editing, and then we just kind of, something happened, and you couldn't make that day, and then I got yelled at because like we got something really basic wrong.
What did we get wrong?
No, I think you might be crossing the streams, Kat, because I think there was something about, because I'm actually thinking what you're referring to was Avatar, because somebody was saying something about the turbines on one of the ships in Avatar and how the turbines were too small to support those like Harrier like vehicles, and I was like, no, they're not for lift. They're for steering and guidance. But that was just me speaking to my iPod alone.
Wow, we went a long way to get that Avatar, folks. So I, you know, had to get Eric on here, you know, to make up for 2009. So here you go, pal. How does it feel? Feels great, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's pretty good.
Do you feel the pressure and weight of an entire franchise resting on your shoulders at this moment?
I think it's holding up on its own. But that being said, I never thought it was going to take 4 years for the sequel. Like I at the time in 2009, I thought, oh, Paramount's going to rush this. You know, maybe a 2-year turnover rate. You know, I was thinking like the way Transformers is or Iron Man. Oh, I never thought it would have taken 4 years.
Doesn't feel like it because I think I watch it a lot. Mm-hmm. And so it feels like it was just last year or maybe 2 years ago that it just came out. You just said 4 years. And I was like, wow, it has been 4 years. 2009. Jeez. That's a long time. I was kind of distracted and it kind of snuck up on me. And at the end of the semester, like after I finished my last final, the gift to myself was to go see Star Trek Into Darkness. And I was tired. I still went and I highly enjoyed myself. It did not let me down. I don't know what other people are saying about this. Do you guys know the general consensus online or with bloggers or what people think about this one?
I read a little bit myself, but mostly what I saw was it goes back to the same arguments. It's sort of like a carryover from 2009. Like, there was a big split, I think. Well, I don't know if it was an even 50-50 split, but there was a divergence between fans who were like, hey, this is great. Star Trek's been reinvigorated, et cetera, et cetera. And then there was those ones who felt betrayed because it's an alternate universe, etc. And this is damning our forefathers and our legacy. And so the comments I saw in the new film were sort of like echoes of, you know, depending on which side you were on in 2009, I see like a repeat of that with the people who like 2009 saying, hey, this is great. This is either as good or better. And then the haters basically saying, well, no, I refuse. You know, after what I saw in 2009, I refuse to, you know, contribute another dollar to this abomination. So I refuse to even watch it. And if the rumors I've heard are true about what goes down in this one, then I am definitely not wasting my time.
Yeah. Oh, the rumors on the internet. Okay. Carl, did you read any negative, or did you just kind of get the same feeling that Eric got?
He got it. He nailed it. That's exactly what I heard. And it seemed to be more extreme in each case this time, though. So, you know, those folks that started in the beginning going, you know, I'm here to the original series, and it's an abomination, is a term that I actually saw repeatedly on the, on the internet, so I will completely back him up on it. Abomination! They were the ones who just flat out refused to go this time. You know, I think they kind of tried in 2009, you know, they wanted to see what it was about, but this time, I think they just flat out didn't go. And then there were the folks that were, you know, the gung-ho saying, ah, it's new, it's revitalized. I like the flashy lights. They are saying this is the best one yet. So it has been this big divergence in the family of Star Trek, and that's been interesting. That's been real interesting. So that's what I've seen so far.
Okay. So about that rumor, Eric, the rumor, are you talking about?
We can
spoil it now.
I know,
right?
we can spoil it now. I just wanted to con. Now let me tell you about this rumor. I heard this rumor when this movie got announced. That was the first rumor I heard, that Benedict Cumberbatch was con. And then there was like this big campaign to discredit that, and so I stopped believing it. And then I saw the film again. I mean, well, not again, but you know. And then there he was. I mean, was it something like that for you guys too?
Well, the way I remember it is, originally they were saying that Benicio del Toro was in talks to play Khan. And that went for a while until they said, no, Benicio del Toro was like, no, you know, wash his hands of it. I think they may have asked another Latino actor. I can't remember who the second one was. And then it kind of dropped. But those were just rumors the entire time. And then eventually there was word that Cumberbatch would, you know, play the bad or have a, you know, an important role. And then from that point onward, I think everyone was always speculating a return of Khan and or Gary Mitchell, you know, and that went for a long time, and until they let out that image, like probably last winter, that showed him in that cell, and then everyone like zoomed in on the still image and saw that his name was Jim Harrison or whatever, not Jim, but whatever Harrison, and so everybody was fixated on that. But I had just left it at that, and I hadn't really looked into it since the winter. It was around that time, and I purposely like avoided any other whispers since then till now.
What about your con experience?
Yep. I too was avoiding spoilers. I had a feeling Khan was going to be back, just because, in this modern trend of movies, they have when they're bringing the series back, they have the intro episode, the intro movie. Think of Batman. Mm-hmm. And then the next one that comes out has got to be the ultimate, the uber arch enemy has got to show up. And so that would be the Joker. But here it's Khan. You know, it's that sort of same sort of timing and pacing of things. And I think Nolan's involved in this too. So it's like, oh yeah, well, of course we've established the characters. We've given the history. That was the first episode, first movie, just like Batman. Then the second week, we got to pull out all the stops to bring out, you know, the uber villain that everybody's been waiting for, the Joker Khan. And so that I figured, yeah, I knew he was coming. I honestly wasn't sure I was ready for him yet.
Yeah.
But I had a strong feeling that that's what they were going to do.
So what do you think about his performance as Khan?
Oh boy. Well, see, here's the tough one. Here's where it starts to get a little dangerous, because I am definitely an original series Star Trek loyalist.
Oh, here
I come
we go.
From all back in the day, and you know, I have a that was where my fandom for Trek came from. So, you know, I'm not all late to the ship and hopping on DS9 claiming
you know
I'm
what?
A Trek.
Hey, don't.
I know I was not naming any names. I'm not naming any names.
Don't
I'm just
start with me.
So all I'm saying is, man, you know, Ricardo Montalban, between the bridge from you know,
but didn't he have a fake rubber chest?
Are you gonna let me finish?
Okay,
yeah, come
I'm
on.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
I don't think so.
Between the bridge, you know, the sentimental bridge of Ricardo Montalban from the original series to Trek II, just you know that arch, just how exciting and touching and emotional that was, you know, that's some big shoes to fill. And particularly the character of Khan is so important in the Trek legacy. So that was the first reason I was like, oh, maybe we're not ready for Khan yet. You know, we just got the crew together. I don't know. But the other thing is the actor that you pick for Khan has really gotta bring something big. He's gotta bring something big to play the role. So if you completely ignore the entire history, legacy of Khan, you don't pay any attention to the importance of how, you know, he connected the series, you ignore how powerful Ricardo Montalban was in Trek II. He's actually my favorite Trek villain, so Trek II. On its own, Cumberbatch did a good job. On his own, he did a good job as Khan in this movie. You know, he was a solid villain. I thought he was a better villain than what's his name in the last one?
Eric Bana.
Yeah, than Bana. He did a better job, you know, as the villain than Bana. But you know, I got to temper this stuff because, you know, there are some peripheral context here that makes it really, really tough for me to say, yeah, you know, it was great to see Khan back again. He did a good job as the villain in this Trek movie. I'll put it that way.
So what's the non-safe answer? Because you're like walking on eggshells here and it seems like you're holding back and I don't want to hear that. I want to hear, because it sounds like,
well, okay. Well, the non-safe answer, and it's not about Cumberbatch's performance. So I'll give you that. Like I said, I really thought he did a great job. But it's my criticism of the movie in general. It's my criticism in general. You know, we have seen what's been going on with Transformers and, you know, movies like that, where the flash is really becoming more important than the substance. All right. The incredible thing about Star Trek throughout its entire history, throughout all of the series, well, except maybe Enterprise, but you know, through the entire series really has been, there has been an intelligence, sort of a uniqueness about the situations that they encounter, a newness with every one that I've seen that has made it feel like when I sit down and a Star Trek movie opens up, that the universe is spread out in front of me and I am literally going to see something I've never seen before. I'm going to go someplace I've never seen before and the wonder associated with that is going to roll out. I mean, that's how I've always felt. Even the crappy Star Trek movies, I have still, it's gone someplace. Maybe I didn't want it to go, but I hadn't been there before, I assure you that. You know, God needs a starship. I ain't seen that. You know, that was some new crap right there. So the first movie, I definitely gave him a pass because it was a reboot and it had been time and it was so good to see everybody again. And I thought it was smart how they picked the alternate timeline to just sort of wipe away the history that we had known. Some people are upset about that, but I said, hey, at least it was smart the way they did it. They did a good job. With this movie, man, you know, everything was bright and it was beautiful and the characters looked great and the ship was beautiful. The space battle was awesome. And, you know, the acting in key places was really, really good. But then you look at the entire story. Look at everything that happened in this movie. And it really starts to hurt. You know, it really starts to hurt. My first criticism.
Oh, okay, Carl. Okay. We're getting into the film, and I'm talking about Khan right now. Oh. What I'm going to do is I'm going to let you pause. I'm sorry to cut you off. I want to hear Eric's Khan opinion before we start getting into the film itself.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, I'm mostly on the same page with Carl on Khan himself and Cumberbatch. And I thought he did some great, like, pursed, smiling acting. Mm-hmm. Some of the best pursed, smiling acting I've ever seen. Some really good devious stuff. Some great close-ups on him. Doing those strange smiles. But those perverse smiles. But I actually, unlike Carl, who went in kind of expecting Khan to pop up at some point, I wasn't. And I literally didn't really grasp onto the idea until they actually said the name, whoever said it first in the movie, literally said Khan.
Spock.
Like, yeah, and no, not that Khan. But are you referring to the...
I'm referring to when they pulled
to the
up
Darth
Spock.
Vader, like,
No. Oh. But we'll talk about that later. But no, but they called Spock on Visiphone or whatever, and...
They Skyped him.
Okay, they Skyped him. And he gave him the name, and then he, you know, they told him about him, and then he released
the name. Yeah, and I honestly... Okay. I kind of was suspicious, perhaps. I can't remember if they revealed Marcus first or not, Dr. Marcus. But I still didn't – I wasn't fully in until they actually spoke his name, because I realize it's an alternate universe, and I realize there's so much different things or, and events in the Federation and Starfleet and in this universe are playing out much differently than they did in the original series, etc. But you could reconcile a lot of the differences and changes in the 2009 movie in the universe. But it's a bit odd for me to imagine this is the same guy, just because, I mean, I have to say, like, just because Cumberbatch doesn't seem Eastern Indian.
Does Khan have to be that, though?
Well, only because that's where we understand the character to be from and his heritage, and I don't...
In this movie, is that the same?
Well, it shouldn't be different. It shouldn't... There's no reason why it should be different. Because...
That was before the alternate timeline split.
Yes, exactly.
There's supposed to be a commonality before...
Yeah, see, because... Hey, that's the thing. Okay, now I guess to be clear, so maybe some people don't understand. I know we throw around this term alternate reality, like... pretty easily, but there's a difference. This is not, or it shouldn't be, this is not a mirrorverse where, you know, Khan has...
Everything is different. Everything is just randomly different.
Yeah, a mirrorverse, like Sliders, is something is everything is different. You know, there's a goatees in this place, there's no goatees in this place.
It's going to be more than goatees.
That's like a mirror universe or a traditional alternate universe.
Right.
This universe, while it is alternate to the most of the Star Trek canon as we understand it, it had a common starting point.
Supposedly.
So the Khan of the classic series, that's a common point. The universes were the same at that point until nothing should have changed until Nero appeared and started changing history. And so because of that, I feel like Khan should somehow resemble or be like that same character that we saw in Space Seed.
I'm on memoryalpha.org right now, and it said that his background was suspected to be Sikh from the northern region of India. So that's suspected. That's not ever actually said, if they use the word suspected here. So I think that his race could be anything. Well, especially since Ricardo Montalban isn't he Spanish, Hispanic, or what?
He's definitely Latino, but
okay.
But he was cast, even though he is Latino, he was cast to play like an Eastern Asian, Indian type character.
I would have been pretty thrilled with Del Toro playing him, though. Because just his presence
that
seems
is true.
To be a little bit, you know, bigger than what Cumberbatch played him smart. and sleek, like the T-1000, you know, if you want to be a bad guy. That's how he played it. But I do like, you know, sort of the tankish version of Khan, which if you were trying to build a super soldier, you know, that might have been a little more in the direction that you would think. I'm with you, Eric, and I'm going to let this one go because, you know, it is sort of splitting hairs about, you know, the timeline. Well, not about the timeline, but about casting. You know, I'm going to let that go, although I agree with you. I'm going to tell you 100%. I really, when I saw that Cumberbatch was Khan, you know, I also got this eerie sort of Aryan eugenics edge going on that I did that because even with 1960 Star Trek, when they said we're going to build the ideal soldier of the future, that, you know, there wasn't a racial component to that. You know, they mixed it up a little bit and got us Khan. So, I let that go early on and I tried to embrace him as he was. But I again, out of respect for the history and how cool Khan has been throughout the series, I might have appreciated somebody that was from elsewhere on the globe.
Yeah, I let it go too myself, but it is a niggle because it's just a bit inconsistent. Because again, it's just how you define alternate reality, or you know, like you know, I try to lay it out because yeah, if this was a mirrorverse, anything goes. But this isn't a true mirrorverse. It's just, it's, you know,
alternate, multiverse. Well, I did not care so much about Khan's race or whatever. I really enjoyed Cumberbatch as Khan. And like you, Eric, because I let go of the rumor, I didn't expect this to be Khan because, like you said, Carl, it felt a little too soon. So when, you know, it built up and we finally get revealed that it's Khan, I loved it. I was in love. I let out a squeal. I really enjoyed him as Khan. And I think I would like to see more of him if they, you know, have some sort of accident in the pods.
Oh, I'm sure that's coming. Khan, yeah. The return of Khan is going to be happening. So, yeah.
So I think he had the same spirit of Khan. I like the way he fought well. He took his shirt off. It was sexy. You know, that has to be a component. I was in love with his
getting zip it. That was going to be an important part for you, Kat.
Zip it.
And you know what else I'm going to add just for you. You know what else I'm going to add just for you. You know the extras, right? You know the extras DVD that's coming out. To make up for the fact that the completely tasteful body shot of Dr. Marcus, to balance that out, Abrams has said, okay, enough. I have extra footage of Cumberbatch in the shower. I'm putting that on the DVD.
Yes.
So there you go. Now we're gonna have little Marcus, little Khan,
little Cumberbatch
in
3D.
Oh, I'm sorry. So Stephanie, we're talking about Star Trek. Thanks for joining us. And
hi,
Khan, and his entrance into the franchise, the newly, I guess, rejiggered franchise. And what did you think about that? Did you see first Wrath of Khan?
The original, yes.
Yeah. And so what did you think about New Khan?
I liked New Khan. I think it was
Retcon, as I like to call him.
Retcon? Oh, that's cute.
Thank you. I thought it was a nice update, you know, because he's such a steely character, and he's not right away over the top like Ricardo Montalban. So I don't know. I liked it. Mm-hmm. I thought it was pretty cool.
See how I let that go?
Yeah.
You know, we have a lot of Khan loyalists on this podcast today, and they were, I guess, saying that they really wanted his racial profile to stay the same, and that should have not changed.
Well, it's not that I wanted it, like, it was on my wish list, but it's just for consistency. A mirror universe. A mirror universe would be where, like, Chekhov is, like, now a female or something like that. But this is not that type of, or it's not supposed to be that type of universe. It's supposed to be a universe that is, like, consistent with the history and prehistory that we've already seen and experienced.
The spirit of Khan is still there, though. I mean, they're both super intelligent dudes who, you know, have a way with words and, you know, who kind of steal the scene. I don't know.
I completely agree. The spirit is all there. I'm just saying, and it's only a minor niggle for me. I've accepted it. I've made peace with it. It just doesn't fully make sense. I mean, because I've reconciled all the other changes. Like, I've, you know, come up with my own schemes to explain things that were different, like in the 2009 Star Trek from what we knew. But this one's kind of hard to reconcile that somehow they defrosted him and he turned out to be a different flavor this time.
It tasks me. And
I don't know why it's such a stretch for you. I mean, maybe his dad was like...
And don't forget now, they also defrosted him from the space year 1990. So that's the other thing that we're gonna let that go.
From the
eugenics wars during the 90s.
Nothing came out of the 90s. Let's let the 90s go.
Stop.
Yeah.
What? 90s crap. Oh my God. I'm recusing myself from this conversation.
Thank you, Judge.
Don't go on alone, right?
Okay. Okay, so let's get into the film itself, Carl. And I cut you off earlier because we didn't want to get into the film. I really wanted to talk about Khan first. So you said you had, you know, minor problems with the film. What were they again?
Oh, geez. They weren't minor. They weren't minor. It's the problem. And I didn't want to go first because I wanted to give everybody a chance. Okay.
Well, does anybody else want to go first on that? Okay, I'll go first. The film. The film itself. So, I don't know. I was not expecting anything. And I think when I go in like that, I just let the story reveal itself. And I just enjoy it. I enjoyed the Klingons. They had a different look. They're kind of creepier and more imposing. I did not notice lens flare or not. The story itself, it was fine. I don't like that we lost Pike because he was in danger again. But this time he actually died, so you know, I don't know. Bones as Carl Urban, I no longer am annoyed by him, so I won't say I love him, I won't say I liked him, but he's there and I've accepted him, so I like that. I did not expect the Spock appearance, the old Spock, so I thought they were done with him, and he came on the scene and I was like, yes. So, I don't know. I'm all around fangirl positive about this one. I didn't really have any problems. I enjoyed the mention of Section 31 from Deep Space Nine. There was a Deep Space Nine shout out. There were, of course, other shout outs to love taps to the fans or whatever. And because it's in a different universe, I'm just able to more accept the changes that they make and just roll with the punches. So, I mean, I think it was a great film. I think they were on par with one another. I don't think one is better than the other, but I have to see it again because I've only seen it once. So, but I don't know. It was good. I enjoyed it.
Stephanie.
Man, you guys want to skip me. I'm eating a banana. You guys still leave? You guys want to skip me. I've had a long day.
Okay, let her have her snack. Please put that on mute. I don't want to hear a banana.
It was on mute. That's why I was so super quiet.
Oh, Eric, can you pick this up for me here with the
well, professional I don't know. I feel empty-handed without a fruit.
Oh my God! Oh.
I didn't know we were supposed to bring our own fruit.
I'm starving, guys. I'm on a freaking diet because every time I come on Sci-Fi Party Line, I have like nose like problems, and I'm always like stuffed up and sneezing and stuff. And I think it's because I'm allergic to what I'm eating, which is primarily geek food. So I'm on a diet, and I'm slightly pissy, and I don't get anything that I like. So I'm eating a freaking banana.
Okay, Eric, grab your dingleberries and go.
Wow.
Those are your fruit.
No, I thought I liked it a lot. It was really good. It's difficult for me to compare to the 2009 movie because I adored that film. I still adore it. Because I thought it was, I liked the story. I thought it was very competent.
Are you talking about 2009 or this one?
No, Into Darkness.
Okay.
I thought it was very competent. They definitely tried to do what sequels do. And, you know, same as the first, you know, except multiplied times two. And it was all good. And I was with it, you know, going along, trying to unravel the mystery myself. And I thought I had a lot of the plot figured out like 20 minutes in. And then I turned out to be very, very wrong. And I was glad about that. And it was all good for the most part. And it was never a dull moment. And there was nothing really that I disliked or that I'd want to change. The only thing I noticed that I felt personally is that I remember vividly seeing the 2009 film and just like almost jumping out of my skin because I didn't know what to expect going into that film at all. And within the first like 5 seconds of when it started, I just got chills and I had it all the way through the 2009 movie. And I just like ate everything up the first time, all the visuals, the dialogue, the references, the actors, everything. This time, I didn't have that feeling, and I don't know that it's the film's fault. It's probably my fault.
Mm-hmm.
So I just didn't have that crazy buzz that I got the first time around, and it's probably not the movie's fault. You know, there was nothing that got me over the top excited in the film. I mean, no single element. Like, I know younger me would have been so excited when we saw that souped-up starship, the Vengeance or whatever it was called.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, because younger me used to eat that stuff up, with especially pertaining to Star Trek. And current me was just like, all right. Okay. That's cool. And, yeah, all the fan-wanky stuff I responded to, and it was nice, and most of it didn't make me roll my eyes, which was a good thing. And I mean, I liked it all, but yeah, it just, I don't know. It just didn't have that little missing ingredient, which I don't know what that ingredient is. Maybe, I mean, Carl kind of alluded to it before, but maybe something more and completely different would have been more exciting, perhaps. Like, because I mean, it was kind of fun to see, oh, once we realized this is Khan, and kind of see, oh, well, you know, the first time we did this, it went this way, but now it's going that way. Oh, that's very clever. But perhaps it would have been nice to see something completely different or, you know, completely new situation.
I don't know. I think every time I'm on with Eric, it's like we saw a different movie. I don't know. I really enjoyed this movie, and I liked it so much more than the last one, than
wow.
the 2009 one. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I really liked it. Yeah.
Why?
Why? Why did I really like this movie? That's not to say that I didn't like the last one, because I actually, everything that Eric's describing, I felt in the same, at the same time. Like, I loved that movie. It appealed to 16-year-old me, 16-year-old fan me. But
because
this
you're
one,
18 right now.
Yeah, that's great.
Just making sure.
Absolutely. I really liked this movie because, it had plenty of action. It had plenty of geeky tech stuff. But it also, you know, it had those kind of thoughtful Star Trek moments in it, too. Those kind of overarching themes that, you know, surpass the time and or transcend the time. And so, you know, we're talking about terrorism, and we're talking about sending drones out, and we're talking about crossing the lines and completely ignoring the Prime Directive. And I don't know. It felt really adventurous. I mean, I loved the opening sequence. It felt a little bit Indiana Jones to me, but you know, I'm sure that I'm sure that Steven Spielberg and George Lucas probably stole from some of the campier Star Trek earlier original series episodes, you know, because that felt like exploring a new frontier, exploring something new, and you know, scenes teeming with danger, yet the cocky lead always ends up okay, and you know, so that felt really fun, and it felt a lot like the 2009 movie. And then you know, the lasting kind of theme throughout, which, you know, emotion over logic, which is a traditional Star Trek theme, but also, you know, whether or not rules were meant to be broken and just how far you're supposed to break those rules, because rules were put there in the first place to protect people. And anyway, I just felt a lot of gray area in this movie, and I think that's where Star Trek's storyline excels.
Okay. Cool. Now let's go with the grumpy old man.
Get off my lawn, cat. Okay, but Stephen, I appreciate that. That was very I'm being genuine here, because I in my crankiness I had forgotten the general story of basically of terrorism that was going on. Star Trek has, every movie has in some way sort of dipped into what was going on at the time. And that, although it was subtly done, that was a very important theme to what happened in this movie, and that kind of synced it to the present day, that in a way that was consistent with past Star Trek movies. So that's good. I hadn't thought about that, but okay. So here I got to do the buckshot criticism, because my first thing I do want to say is I experienced this movie like, you know, Kat always demands that I do. It's a popcorn movie. Take all your preconceived notions. Just try to enjoy it as it is. And that's what I did. I went into this movie, and that was how I went into this, because I wanted to let go. I didn't want to be, just because, you know, I have a strong connection to the original series and all the old movies, I didn't want to bring that in to this, the experience of this movie.
But you did anyway.
But hang on. So I'm going to say that I did enjoy the movie. I did, despite what I'm going to say and all my buckshot. It was fun. It was pretty, and it was exciting, and it was a fun movie. So I did really enjoy it. I didn't like it anywhere near as much as 09, though. And when Eric said, he said two things. He said, one, that it did what a sequel is supposed to do. And the second thing he said is, you know, it didn't quite feel to him, he didn't have the same feelings that he did with 09. The first thing I say to that is, seemed like 09's had a harder job to do. I mean, rebooting the entire series in terms of what you have to craft with the universe, with the story, with the characters, all of that, that seems like a much, much harder thing to do than to follow up on that with the second movie. So while I got the same shivers, and I was really, really impressed, and I was excited about what they did in 09, and even with my legacy of connecting with the original series, I still really, really liked it. I liked the speed, and I liked all of it in 2009. When this one came out, and I was trying to give it the same benefit of the doubt, I figured that was the hard task. You know, trying to reboot the series and create all of the characters that we knew. Now that those pieces were in place, and you're going to bring me Khan too, this is going to be easy. You know, this is going to be the you know, the explosive, action-packed, you know, simple, just kind of flat-out vengeance episode that we knew original, you know, Star Trek II was. It's easy to bring me space battles and anger. We knew who the guy was. That should have been clean and easy to deliver across the board. So, you know, that's... So from a popcorn standpoint, that's what I was kind of going, okay, that's what we're going to get. It's easy. It's going to be fun. Now all the pieces are in place. Let me have it. And now, and as we start to go through the episode, there are things, and they, I don't know, you know, Kat, you always call me nitpicking about stuff, but mm-hmm. I don't think these things are small. I mean, the one thing, and this is an overarching thing, when you think about the character of Kirk. Now, we know, you know, he's Horatio Hornblower, and he flies by the seat of his pants and all that stuff. But even in original series Star Trek, Captain Kirk, he bent the rules a lot, you know. But you didn't get the feeling, for the most part, that the situations he was in where he was bending the rules were because he had made no or bad decisions prior. You know, it's like when he's presented with the impossible, then he freaks out and does something completely off the handle. But for the most part, Kirk is doing his best to be a responsible captain. He's doing what he's expected to do. He's thoughtful on board the ship. You know, you see him always confirm with Spock, trying to, man, how am I going to get out of this? What happened here? Throughout this movie, you don't feel like that with this Kirk. He still feels young, and that's part of the feel of it. But he feels like dangerous, like well, you know, kind of flippant about everything. Sure, we'll just put the ship underneath the ocean and wait and see how Spock does. Ah, there's no problem if we just fly around here and see what's going on. You know, it didn't feel like he had been very, very smart as a captain. The magic of Kirk wasn't that he was reckless. The magic in Kirk was that he's able to make things happen when no other option is there. So that's the feel that I got for Kirk. And in the first movie, it was okay because clearly he literally just kind of ripped off the ship. You know, he just got out of the turbo lift. He's sitting in the captain's seat for the first time, literally flying by the seat of his pants to save everybody. Cool. I'm down with that with the first one. I'm not quite sure how much time was supposed to have lapsed between the last movie and this one, but despite the fact it gets chewed out by Pike, you do get the idea that time has passed, and geez, he almost lost his ship back then. Shouldn't that have made him a little bit, you know, a little bit more response? So I don't know.
Kirk lost his ship a lot throughout the whole entirety of old Kirk.
Well, not during the series. With his 5-year mission, he held on to it. It was only his movies that he kept blowing mess up. But okay, so, all right, so, okay.
Well, so maybe that's what they're trying to,
You see, he hasn't even begun his 5-year mission, though. He hasn't even started the 5 years yet.
Well, then that means he's very young, and it's at the very beginning, so.
Well, okay, so they kind of goes back and forth on that. But, man, you know, he got the brand newest ship, and he's at, okay, so. The other thing is, let me ask you about, do you think that Spock should have Spock on speed dial? No, I'm serious about that now.
They're the same guy. I'd have me on speed dial. But
think about it now. I mean, besides the time-space paradoxes. Uh-oh, did we lose stuff? Okay. Besides the space-time paradoxes. every time... I forget what we call them. Spock Prime and Spock New. What was it? Neo Spock and Spock Prime? Is that how we do it? Okay.
Spock,
So Neo Spock, do you mean that every time he experiences something new, he's going to call up old
that
Spock?
That was just the one time. You only saw it one time. No, let's say it happened only one time. Let's say they was going through a whole little thing.
Why do you know it was only one time? Because, I mean, why would he have assumed that, you know, in your timeline, he just calls him up and says, hey, man, we see
you don't know what happened. That was a cut scene, like the scene cut from something else. They could have said, you know what, I need to confer with Spock and God. We probably missed all it took to get to that point. Don't just assume just because you saw it happen fast on screen that it mean it happened fast in that way. To me, it kind of felt like Spock was in some sort of like doing something and he had to hunt him down because Spock turned away like he was doing some busy stuff and blah blah. And then he was like, I know we're not supposed to talk all the time and I'm not supposed to ask you about this blah blah. So
well, wouldn't Spock be pushing it all the time, though? I mean, so the ship is in danger. I gotta call Spock Prime. Hey, I know I'm not supposed to be calling you, but the warp nacelle is about to fold up under the ship. Do you remember seeing anything like this? I got the feeling that, you know, I know that it was a cutscene. I know, but come on, man. They're supposed to be talking. I'm sorry. That's a little much going on there. Because even at the end of the last movie, they're just sitting there going, dude, you know, this is against rules. We shouldn't be doing that. No. Speed dial Spock. I ain't with it. That bugged me. But okay. I'm sorry, gratuitous. It was gratuitous. I just, if you're going to bring him back, give me some.
I think you thought way too much about that. What? And it was just, it's not that big a deal. He called him one time. You can't just discount and ignore Spock and the wealth of information that he has just because you think you don't want to know something. See, normally Spock, what? What?
Violate the space-time continuum.
Yeah, well, I'm just...
And he'd already used his 50-50, and he'd already asked the audience, so he only had the phone a friend left.
The Enterprise becomes, what is it, you know, the cab game, the trivia cab game.
Cash cab?
Cash cab, thank you. The skies light up, players. I've got Spock on my iPad.
I think you thought way too hard about that, and you got way too annoyed with it. And Carl, I'm going to have to ask you to stop. This is an intervention now.
Oh, my God. So ridiculous. You can't just be pulling Spock out your pocket like that.
Well, I thought he called Dr. Bell.
Pocket Spock.
Oh, my God.
Pocket it made Spock. Perfect sense to do that.
Why? It made How did you know? Why? Okay, so what's too small to call old Spock then? So what issue is not dangerous enough to call old Spock about?
Does Spock's hook like mine?
Mm-hmm.
They were in mortal danger.
They're always in danger. They're in a starship. It's space. Space is dangerous. That's always going to happen.
I don't know about that. I think that the reason why they called Spock in... or the Prime, Spock Prime, or whatever they called him in, is that everybody's character in this new universe, you may expect them to do one thing, but it's not a guarantee that they'll act that way. And so the main reason to have that scene at all is to expose how different the second Spock is. And maybe they, you know... maybe it took the first Spock a lot longer to get there, but I guess the second Spock is on, you know, a narrower trajectory, and so he's feeling emotions earlier on. I mean, I thought it was pretty deftly done, because I don't know, but I do know how Carl stands on this, but I still feel that Kirk is, the second Kirk is coming into the Kirk that we see in the original series. I mean, he's coming into that character. He's honing it in or honing it down, but he's got lots of room to grow. And the main reason why he acts this way, some might say reckless, in this movie is to get his hand freaking smacked down by Pike. You know, Pike took the Enterprise away from him for his actions. He learned a lesson there. And then he calls Spock in when he's saying, look, I'm being too emotional here. I need you. I need you to take this chair. You will lead us to safety. There's a lot of role reversals here. I thought it was deftly done. I thought it was really cool to see that. It was unexpected. I was able to accept it because from the 2009 movie, I've moved on. Okay, we're starting fresh with all these characters. We don't know how they're going to react. That is part of the surprise. That's part of how cool that this movie was, at least to me.
Okay, all right. Well,
I think technically, because I look at the years that these stories are supposedly taking place, and I think although time has passed since the 2009 film, I think year-wise, the second film, Into Darkness, still takes place pre. Kirk Prime taking command of the Enterprise. So it we're does. Still yeah,
he hasn't
so we're
gotten
still
his 5 years
seeing,
yet.
Yeah, because he obviously got promoted much faster in this timeline as compared to the original. And then that whole thing about him getting his command taken away by Pike is one of those things that they did a lot in the 2009 film. They did this one where it's sort of one of those weird allusions to the original films. Because that's what Captain Kirk did in the motion picture to Captain Decker. He's like, hey, Decker,
yeah.
I'm getting command of the Enterprise back, and sorry, you're going to have to be first officer. And he's like, oh. And what's weird, too, is because Pike, since the end of the 2009 film and in the beginning of this film, it's weird because he dresses like Kirk, as Kirk dresses in the beginning of the motion picture. So it's just, it's that weird swapping of chairs and characters.
Yeah,
and
I'm sure that wasn't an accident.
Oh, you know, it was not. Absolutely.
Yeah, and so it was one fan's version of, you know, how he wanted to see it played out. And I understand there's lots of fans with different opinions, and I just wasn't as offended by that as I suppose you guys were. I wasn't offended by a lot of that.
Just con skin tone, I guess.
I loved that Spock Prime. I love that he's like, well, you know, I'm not supposed to really tell you anything, but yeah, that guy's a bad motherfucker. You know, even Spock broke the rules.
Well, that's the thing, because Spock Prime couldn't say, yeah, actually, he killed me. Actually, he killed you. You know, so he had to dance around that.
I mean, really, how much did he dance around? That's what made that scene so fun to me. It's like, well, you got your point across. He got his point across, because in, you know, second Spock totally turned the tables, which was great.
Yeah.
Well, the emotional impact from Wrath of Khan was significant to me, because obviously the loss of Spock at the end, well, you know, combined with seeing Khan again, the loss of Spock at the end was really, really poignant. And the fact that we had to wait all of those years, you know, we didn't know whether Spock was going to come back or not. And that's part of what made that experience so moving when you see Trek 2. My general criticism about a lot of films now is that they seem really rushed. They don't, you know, if they have a history or if they have an amazing arc of history behind them, that they should use that to move the story and to pull the audience in. So the loss of Captain Kirk in this particular movie, from the Tribble scene on, was anybody surprised Mm-mm. that he was not Mm-mm. dead or was not good? That seemed so telegraphed. I was trying to, you know, I was trying to not see where this is going. And, you know, they sure threw a twist in there, and it wasn't Spock. It was Captain Kirk, which immediately implies there's no way he's going to be dead at the end of the movie. I mean, if it was anybody other than Kirk, maybe they would have stayed dead into the next movie. But with it being Captain Kirk, whole franchise on his shoulders, I never felt that he was really in danger. And that's even independent.
And they couldn't pull that off these days because of the internet and stuff like that.
Right.
So it's like, why would they bother
because
trying
to... internet? What do you mean?
They could never have pulled off what they did with Star Trek II and Spock dying. I'll agree with you 100%, Carl. I was devastated when Spock died. I didn't know that he was going to come back. I was super young when I saw it, but seriously devastated, and had to wait many years before I saw him come back. This one, you can't do that again. I mean, if they had played it out in much the same way, it wouldn't have been as impactful, and it could never have been as impactful. So they're just forging a new way. They're just forging a new path. That's pretty much all. I mean, yes, I absolutely knew as soon as the Tribble came back to life, even before the Tribble came back to life, as soon as Bones is sticking blood in the dead Tribble, you knew that was going to happen. But still, it wasn't enough for me to go, well, I'm not going to, there's nothing new going to come out of this franchise. And I think they're right to do it. They're not treading over stuff that they just can't fully recapture. They can't capture that. They've got to forge a new way.
I was hoping they would. That I wanted to see them do something new. This, they had the opportunity to fork the story in a lot of different ways. It didn't have to be, quote, the loss of a prime crew member to pull at the audience's heartstring. They have an entire universe to play with. They can't come up with anything else that can bring us in as an audience. That's why I'm trying to let go of the original series. But at the same time, what they're giving us is, you know, a wink at what happened before, but it's not as poignant. And okay, so if they couldn't do that again, and I agree with you, okay, fine, they couldn't give us the same emotional impact, then is there nothing else that they could have given us that would have leveraged the world of Star Trek that we knew, that would have connected us emotionally in a different way, in a new way?
Well, we're not as attached to those characters like you were back then. Well, not you specifically, but, you know, you don't have that same attachment. These people are still very new. There is no TV show. So, no, I don't think they could have done that in an impactful way.
Well, one thing I think they did, though, in the first, in 2009, that was pretty impactful and was pretty crazy and was a big game changer, even though we're not fully connected to the new versions of the characters, was the death of Spock's mother, as well as the destruction of Vulcan.
Okay, yeah. That was good.
That was pretty big. That was pretty impactful, and you completely got the gravity of that. All the repercussions, you know, and what that could mean for the whole universe.
That's what I'm talking about. I mean, because like I said, this is Star Trek. They have the whole universe and beyond. I want to see something. They have an amazing history that they can draw on and give us new ways to emotionally connect with the characters. And that just seemed like a really shallow, familiar way of doing it again.
What seemed like a shallow way? Just the Khan thing?
Yeah. Well, no, how Kirk died. The whole thing of how Kirk died.
I think this is what I was going to say. Audiences are too smart these days for them to pull some of the stuff that they did back in the day, in addition to the internet. So I don't think that they could have done anything really seriously intense, unless killing Kirk's father again, or killing Pike, or blowing up Vulcan, and then we've already done that, so we don't want to do that again. So I think what they did was a lot of build-up here, and you're just not going to get that same effect. You know, I didn't feel the same elation that I did in the 2009 movie, but I was okay with it. I was fine. So I think you need to give them some room to grow. And, you know, maybe this is the even numbered movies are just going to be builder movies, and the odd numbers are going to be blockbusters. I don't know, but I think that you're sinking your claws into it just a little too much at first. And I just think we still have some more to go. I think we have a ways to go, and it'll get better.
Wow, you know how much money and time they put into these movies and what our experience is with science fiction in general. I mean, I hear what you're saying, and I have been more than patient, you know, throughout my history of sci-fi to let them do what they're going to do and flail around and everything. But man, you know, you've seen some of the preliminary numbers for this movie coming out. You can't be doing that.
It's not like they pulled A-Team and got or John Carter here. It was a success. I mean, it wasn't Avengers success, I don't know, but I didn't lose money,
right?
And it was very popular, so I mean, I don't think they did anything wrong, and I think that there will be another one made. So I mean, what do you mean? Do you think they're losing people for this second one? Or
I think that, you know, again, I do carry a lot of the, you know, the old schoolers with me. I'm going to tell you, I did appreciate the movie by itself. It really was pretty, and I enjoyed the action and all of that. But, you know, Star Trek has a gravitas that you have to respect. And if you want it to live in the future, you know, live forward the way it has in the past, you got to hang on to some of that. The word of mouth after this is that, you know, it's like the Michael Bay version of Star Trek, where, you know, it was pretty and it was big and it was explosions and chases and there are fist fights on moving cars and, you know, everything that you expect in a good solid action film. But when you back away and you think about the greater themes that have been important in Trek movies, I'll give you the terrorism and going too far. That was hinted at well in this story. That was done well. But that kind of got lost in a lot of the other lens flare. And and if you could have delivered a new story, something different in this, it, all of those old schoolers who, you know, saw the first one and were kind of, you know, grumbling a little bit and then threw their hands up when they found out what this one is about, the word of mouth alone, if something, you know, different, something really different had happened in this one, you could have pulled them back into the theater because they would have grumbled, but just because they wanted to see, you know, okay, I got to see how they did this. I got to see how they did that. You're not getting them back in for this movie because they're going to say they've seen it already and they've seen it better. So
you know what? Eventually, those people are going to die off.
Yeah, but see,
and then we're going to have new people being introduced to the films, and they're going to really like it.
If that's the case, why don't you just start a new franchise then? Don't try to.
They did.
I don't want to see Kirk. Because if it was like, you know, DS10 the movie, then none of this stuff would, none of these criticisms hold. None of these things unless they kept making the same episodes as movies again, you know. But
you'll go for them doing totally different things for Star Trek, but not for Spider-Man and Batman. Those are different. They twist the Joker in a different fashion. They do different stories with him. It's not exactly the same as the other one. Why can't we do that with Star Trek and just enjoy it?
Because they did it better. They did it better. The Joker.
Not all of the films were better. You remember the one with George Clooney?
No. I thought you were talking about good examples. All right, so yes, and that's why it got canceled for like 10 years is because that sucked and people complained and the movie's lost an audience.
Well, maybe we'll get another.
This movie did not. This movie did not suck. What it is guilty of is not being the Wrath of Khan. That's what it's guilty of. But it is not was not supposed to be the Wrath of Khan. It wasn't called the Wrath of Khan. It was called Into Darkness. What you saw was character development and identity crises and people grappling with gray area. You saw a lot of role reversals. You saw a lot of daddy issues. You saw a lot of good and bad and surprising good and surprising bad. You saw a lot of terrorism, topical things that we as a world care about today. You saw a lot of intrinsically Star Trek things. You just won't allow yourself to see that because no one can replace the death of Spock at the end of Wrath of Khan. Can replace that. Okay, but what was there was a great adventure, was the classic Star Trek questions that you have, man's role in the universe and what does man play? You have war, you have adventure, you have exploration, and you have character tropes that are emerging.
Okay,
and it's done a different way.
Okay, so the Star Trek things that you said, there were intrinsic Star Trek things that I'm missing out on. Just give me a couple. What are those intrinsic Star Trek things that I'm missing out on?
Boldly where no other man has gone.
No, you can't. That was at the end of the movie. I'm talking about during the movie. Just give me something during the movie.
That is during the movie.
That's during the movie. You've got intrinsically Star Trek things. You've got these little one-liners. You've got Bones saying, "Damn it, I'm a doctor." You've got these kinds of, well, I thought that you would read the report, and I thought you would know that I would tell the truth in the report. I mean, you've got these intrinsic Star Trek things. You've got these questions. You've got these topical themes that they're tackling. I did not leave the theater super disappointed that Kirk and Spock reversed roles, because throughout the entire movie Into Darkness, we were grappling the idea of reversing roles, good and bad, and what is good and what is bad, and is there a gray area there, and how can we meet in the middle and keep everybody out of danger? We've also got some sort of storyline building with the Klingons. I mean, that was left right. That was left unresolved for sure. And you've got the aftermath of a giant secret warship crashing into Earth and killing a whole bunch of people. I mean, you might have, in fact, cast a whole big thing of doubt on the Federation. And maybe this is the Federation's dark ages in the minds of the people living on the planet. I mean, it seems like it's building to something more. And it seems like it wasn't exactly the Wrath of Khan, but it could never be that. It's doing what J.J. Abrams does. The only complaint I have is the stupid damn lens flares. That's it.
That, I didn't mind.
I saw that crap in
space. I didn't mind the lens flares. My only complaint, Stephanie, was Spock saying, "Khan," because I literally rolled my eyes at that. That was not fun.
No, I smiled at that. I mean, whatever.
It's just right? It was just super cheese. And he didn't do it right. And like, so what, Kirk died? It wasn't like Kirk's son. And I don't know. It didn't have the same resonance. But I didn't care. That it was just like, eh.
Kirk died so that Spock could see that sometimes going with your gut is something heroic, and instead of just, you know, leaving logic to rule the day. That's why Kirk died, and Kirk left Spock in the captain's chair because Kirk knew that you can't always go on your gut. Sometimes you're gonna your luck is gonna run out. I mean, that's what I got from it. And I wasn't thinking that hard from it either. Like, I mean,
I know. Yeah.
I was just like, this is a summer movie. I really, really enjoyed myself. And I wasn't expecting this comparison to Khan. I mean, of course they're going to be compared to Khan, but I didn't care because it's a brand new universe. I just didn't care.
Eric, what say you?
Well, I mean, I'm thinking a little bit now of the future. I mean, films to come, and we talked about it a little bit earlier, as much as I'd like them to see them chart new ground, and, you know, with the third film, with the inevitable third film, and do something that is not really based on something so important from the previous films or series, as much as I'd like to see that, that being said, I wonder how long can you continue this new reboot franchise universe before you're going to have to go Borg?
You know,
like, how long can you delay that gratification?
So long, so long.
I hope they really... Because the Borg didn't appear in TOS, so I don't
know. Oh, what's wrong with that? It's something new. I mean, it's in the spirit of Star Trek.
It's just too soon. I'm not ready for the freaking Borg.
That's the conundrum. I think it would be too soon, like, let's say, for the next film.
I thought Khan was too soon, but Khan didn't... He didn't overshadow the whole movie. There was other things going on that I enjoyed. But I think I like his difference because it was just different. It was a different explanation, and I was okay with it. And I hope if they do the Borg, that maybe they'll evolve differently or something like that to make it interesting. Because
absolutely, I'm sure it'll be extremely different. But I'm just saying, like,
eugenics race.
Would you say, Steph?
I said Khan's eugenics race is a lot like the Borg.
That is
the
true.
The spirit of the Borg.
That is true.
But, and they didn't die. They froze them again.
I mean, V'ger is still on its way back. It hasn't arrived yet. You know, it could have some little Borg technology riding piggyback this time. You know,
V'ger will crash with the ship with Khan on it, and that'll be the origin of the Borg.
But my only point is that it just... It just seems too cool. It just seems too cool that I don't know how long you can hold off before you want to play in that well.
So long.
It's Star Trek. Why not throw it in? It just works.
Because of curmudgeons like Carl complaining about the comparison.
I'm not saying it should be the next film.
And there's too much Trek. Oh, now we can't have the Borg because that. All right.
I'm not saying it should be the next film or the next one of that, but it feels the Borg feel inevitable. Resistance is futile.
I'd love to see
they
somebody.
They never showed up in any of the other Star Trek movies except for the Next Generation ones.
True.
Right?
Well, yes, because they had never been known prior to that except for when Enterprise dabbled in Borg. But other than Enterprise...
That sounds so naughty.
That's a European move I picked up on the internet. But,
oh, gross, Eric.
Because, they were frozen in the Antarctic when our Enterprise crew finds them.
See?
So there could still be... So right in the refrigerator next to Khan, see... You got the Borg, you know, the pieces frozen. So one day the engine starts to thaw. They thaw out, and then the Borg merges with Khan, and then you got Borg Khan. There you go.
You understand, Kat? He was not making up that first bit. Like he actually, I'm surprised Carl remembers his Enterprise canon.
It's the Borg. I know the Borg.
Mm-hmm. That's what happened. That is what happened.
The Borg were frozen back in time. And so now, right next to Khan in the freezer.
Oh, wait. Actually, weren't they remnants from First Contact? Yeah, because when the sphere broke apart in First Contact, I think that's when those Borg landed in the ice.
But they broke through time, remember? They broke through time, way back then. But yes, they're still there.
Yeah. So then Archer found them, and it was actually remnants from First Contact events.
There could still be Borg stuff there. There you go.
Yes.
Why are we letting this happen?
Because
it's either Borg or this big silver cylinder comes looking for whales.
I hope they never do that.
And then we get Pike and company, Christopher Pike and company, in 2013, San Francisco.
Captain, I hear whale song.
I'm just letting them do their thing because they're all pissy that Wrath of Khan was not more evident in this movie. I was totally fine with it. You guys do your thing.
Cumberbatch is my new...
Look, I'm going to start a Kickstarter out for... I want Zachary Quinto in a pool with a whale.
Yes, headband. You got to have the headband all at the same time.
Oh, I don't want to see that. I think that was a mistake.
Well, I'm just saying it's either Borg or it's that.
Why are those the two choices?
Why?
Because clearly in this universe, there's nothing else new. So it's got to.
I'm saying that probe is still on its way.
There's nothing else new.
Carl, you're such a jerk right now.
I'm mad. Frankie,
I don't understand. Like, you went into it so positive, and I thought you really enjoyed it. And you're like, Nick, you sound like the Abomination people. You sound like an undercover Abomination person.
Because I have seen so many movies that are exciting and pretty. And I'll give it that. On its own.
It was more than just pretty.
It was pretty. It was exciting. They had some good characters in it. But I think a lot of the bigger cohesiveness themes that are traditionally covered in Trek got lost. That's it. I mean, they hinted at it, sprinkled in there. It was sprinkled in there, but not in the way.
I think
that...
JJ is going to bring it home, and this was character building. I think that you needed every piece of this, and that there's a third movie that's going to bring you home. And if it's not.
You forget there are potential new fans out there that maybe have been staying away from Star Trek because it was not as accessible to them. This is a more accessible movie, and I don't mean that to be an insult.
Yeah.
I mean that this is more inclusive of a movie. You'll have more fans, and that's not a bad thing.
It's not.
Because then we'll see more science fiction.
Well, but
in the future.
And I have to say, too, I also felt like I was getting, seeing this film, I sort of felt like I was getting a primer to what to expect in Star Wars Episode 7, because I verily felt the Indiana Jones, certainly at the beginning, but not just at the beginning, but also the one-on-one between Spock and Khan. It felt like when Indy was taking on that Nazi or whatever he was on the tank in the desert, like it felt just like that fight.
Yeah, or the same one in Crystal Skull, where they're duking it out on the hoods of the moving cars.
Hey, why are you bringing up Crystal Skull?
That's canon.
What are you doing?
That's canon.
Why would you do that?
This fight, Germans.
I mean, I was in a good place with the tank and the whatever, but you had to go Crystal Skull, and that's just, I mean, why? Why would you do that?
That's
he's
canon,
cranky.
People. That's canon, people. You got to take the good and the bad.
He is cranky. That's what's happening right now.
But seriously, folks. I mean, like, it's so strange that it's the same man behind the director's chair who just did these two films and is now taking over Star Wars. And I couldn't help but think about that. And I couldn't help but think this is sort of what I'm sort of expecting the new Star Wars to be like. Like, you know, looking modern and slick like this.
Are you worried, or are you comfortable?
I'm not worried. It's curious to me, because
I can totally buy it for Star Wars. That it feels right. For
no,
Star
what you're
Wars.
Gonna do? Well, what I think C-3PO really should not have. He should have been golden and not silver like they made him now. And then R2-D2 is too skinny. And then Luke Skywalker.
I was perfectly fine with the reboot of Star Trek in every way. I was perfectly fine with the reboot of it. If you're gonna take something and do something new with it, I'm with you. And let me tell you, if anything needs a reboot, it's Star Wars. I mean, Star Wars.
No. You cannot say that and then also go, well, I expected Spock to die, and I'm super upset that he didn't. You can't do that.
I didn't say that I expected Spock to die. I said that it betrayed all the greater traditions of what the deeper Star Trek was about.
And you were the same person bitching about Attack of the Clones.
Yeah, well, yeah, but that's because it was not good. That's totally different. No, I mean, no. So,
did
what
you guys
I'm saying,
do the sci-fi parlor on Attack of the Clones? Did I miss that?
No, it's one of his other rants that we don't have.
But Star Wars is more kinetic than Star Trek is. Star Wars has always been, you know, flashy and fast, and it's, you know, it's a little bit, you know, well, basically, it's a little bit more shallow than Star Trek. That's what made them different kinds of fandoms. And that's what made them respect.
Oh my God! And send your messages to @RoboMinister.
Look, I'm sorry, but you know that it's true. I mean, and that's always been the difference between the fans. And there's nothing wrong with that.
I am a fan of Star Trek and Star Wars.
Me
and
so too.
And you like them for the exact same reasons, right? They're the same.
Yes.
Thing.
You have a spiritual aspect to Star Wars that sometimes you don't get, and Star Trek, you know what, zip your stuff, sir, and take it home.
You absolutely
can be fans of two disparate.
I am fans of two disparate. I recognize that they are different, though. They have different motivations. And that's what I'm saying.
It's fine.
You can't.
So why can't J.J. Abrams also be a fan of two disparate things? I mean,
I don't understand.
Because
the idea is you want to preserve something about what made them disparate. You don't blob them together and make them the same thing just
I'm
because.
I'm sorry, you can't do that. You know why? Because he is a product of both of these legacies. He is the product here, and he's putting his touch on it. And it's a hybrid.
It doesn't have to be a hybrid. It doesn't have to be a hybrid. If you're trying to create something, it's like just like when you put aliens in Indiana Jones. Well, that's a hybrid. But if you were going to see
J.J. Abrams is not responsible for that. What are you doing here?
I'm making a statement about two different fandoms.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? When Indiana Jones Temple of Doom has Club Obi-Wan or whatever, like, it's been there. I mean, he wanted to do that forever. You know that that's what
the name. It wasn't the whole storyline. You know, you could dip.
No, but seriously, it's not like it was such a huge surprise when Indiana Jones came into Aliens.
Yeah, but it was unwelcome. It wasn't a surprise.
It was unwelcome.
I didn't find it unwelcome. What I found
it was
tying back into like Stargate kind of stuff and tying back into canons from other
Oise. Hail to Steph.
Does not compute.
Star Trek is Star Wars are the same thing. And, you know, I think it's okay to glob Stargate into Indiana Jones.
No, it's the same thing. I thought of it as a nod. Prometheus had the same.
A nod is Cafe Obi-Wan. That is a glomming in when you put the whole freaking UFO. That's not a nod.
Yeah, I'm not on.
Premise has been there since science fiction began that aliens populated the Earth. Come on.
We didn't have.
All I'm saying is science fiction has a huge, huge sort of its own, I don't know, mythos. And I don't know, they all feed into each other. I'm not saying it's like the Buddhism of that Star Wars and Star Trek right now are going to be the Buddhism of all science fiction, but what I'm saying is you're going to get people borrowing and you're going to get people influenced because
influence?
That's what they do.
Influence and borrowing, I'm with. But you don't glom them into one. Don't make them the same thing.
Okay, I just honestly, I don't think that the new Star Wars is going to look like. I think it might look aesthetically like the new Star Trek, but I really and truly think that J.J. Abrams will be capable of separating the two.
Yeah.
I think that is more his universe than Star Trek is.
I think he's on record as saying that.
Totally. Yeah, totally.
Well, yeah, I agree. I think so.
But I don't think he has mishandled Star Trek.
Anymore. Yeah, I don't think it's going to be exactly like Into Darkness or 2009. I just got this feeling throughout, especially Into Darkness, where I felt like this was a bit of a taste of things to come in Star Wars, guys.
You know, I have to agree with you on that, Eric. I felt that too.
Oh, I know there are going to be damn light flares in that movie. I mean,
because I know he's not going to try to do what Lucas did and try to, you know, go out of his way to match things up with either the original trilogy or the prequel trilogy. I'm sure he's not going to mind taking things, you know, a little bit more his own route. I mean, like visually and whatnot.
And I'm pretty sure Carl will be bitching. When that movie comes
out. I would be shocked if there would be no artificial lens flare in episode 7. I would be shocked.
He does reboots great. I can't wait to see it.
Look at him being false positive.
I'm being serious.
Wow, some insincere crap.
Now his Star Wars 2, his second one, I might have some hesitation about, but brand new, he's got it. I'm going.
But he's not brand newing it, is he? He's just adding on new. He's tacking on the next episode, right?
Right.
That's correct. What I thought. So it's not even going to be brand new. Well, it might be brand new characters, but.
Well, no, they're bringing back some of the oldies.
Yeah, but I mean, obviously, they're not going to bring back all of the oldies. So
Han Solo will be on Skype.
Skype?
Yes, like they called in Spock on Skype. Oh, don't worry about it.
Sorry. It's based on
I must have missed that when I was eating my banana.
No, it's based on a story pitch that is partly it's from Lucas and other writers. So, you know, it's, yeah, he's taking something and then, you know, putting his interpretation of what's been given to him.
Which is kind of how it goes. I mean, it's just kind of how it goes.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh yeah, I'm fine with it. I'm sure I'm gonna like it, and I'm sure it's gonna probably be Star Wars the movie I enjoyed the most since Return of the Jedi.
I'll tell you this: Star Trek and Star Wars, they are no Tolstoy. Like, if you go back and you watch them. They got their flaws, just like everybody else. You learn to love them because they were new and exciting to you.
And this that's what I'm trying to tell you about Doctor Who, Stephanie. So that's what I'm trying to school you on with Doctor Who. Ladies and gentlemen, we have finally got Stephanie to start watching Doctor Who. She started with Christopher Eccleston. Yes, I'm exposing you right now. she's had some, I guess, visual effect problems with the special effects there in the Christopher Eccleston problem.
You started her with Eccleston. You ought to take her back to 1970, Tom Baker. You want special effects problems. I mean, you could see hands on props moving across this. You could see the TARDIS dangling on string as it spins through space. That's special effect. Eccleston was freaking epic compared to what we had to deal with. But I'm sorry.
I mean, there are, I don't even want to say, but there are literally monsters that are partially made out of tin foil and bubble wrap.
Yes. Yes. Keeping it real.
No exaggeration.
Yes, it's not
exaggerating.
Why do you keep that when you have the opportunity to have better effects?
No, but the 2005 series was wildly updated compared to what came before.
Different. Whatever. The skin flap lady? Are you kidding me with that?
Oh. You could see your skin? That's amazing.
I can't believe you, a fan of Paranormal Activity, can't accept the special effects on
subtle special effects are way
different. But I think it was perfectly in line for like any sci-fi channel series of that time period, like 2005. I don't think they were anywhere behind the curve. Because if I go back to 2005, the only thing I could easily say that looked better in genre was obviously BSG. Maybe Firefly before that. But other than that, I mean, it's right up there.
But those are television shows. Like, they.
Well, wait a second.
They did it.
We're talking about TV shows.
I know. I'm saying. What I'm saying is, so was Doctor Who. They did it. Firefly and BSG did it. So why didn't the new reboot of.
I'm just saying those are the only two who probably surpassed it for the time period.
Yes, there were many others that not surpass.
Yeah, I'm saying BSG was exceptional in that way in 2005, whereas I would say Doctor Who was pretty consistent for the times.
I don't know, 2005 was that magical science fiction year. Surface did it pretty well, and so did Invasion.
Oh my god, what was the third one?
Threshold. Threshold was not as good.
They didn't really have special effects. They
Invasion just had like words under the
now, a light the in the sky and a rubber thing on somebody's neck is not a special effect. That's the same. It was just lit better. That's all. They don't be claiming those as epic triumph. Now, come on.
What about the giant sea monster in the Gulf Coast? Come on.
Totally believable, that shot. It was totally, totally believable.
It wasn't believe. It was just better. What I'm saying is better. Like
I say. So as you start going on, the stories start getting better, right?
Okay. Just now, just the latest one, and it had a freaking one-eyed octopus in a pepper shaker.
Yes. Awesome.
And it was just now getting better, and it's because I completely had to ignore the ridiculous thing that was the Dalek. I did like the story quite a bit.
That's the magic of Doctor Who, actually, because I used to rag on the special effects of it too. But and this has happened with many, many science fiction programs with me. What is that moment where you've been watching them for a while, and then you get it? I mean, it's like a switch is thrown where everything's kind of jangled and it's not quite fitting together. And then all of a sudden something happens and it's like, oh, and the frame of the universe they're trying to create kind of snaps together, and then you're cool with it. You know, it's like, I get it now. And then Doctor Who, that was probably my greatest.
That I
my
guess heart that's going to happen in the third Star Trek movie for you.
Ooh, burn!
I'm leaving it open. It might just happen. It might happen. But it doesn't mean I don't see the rubber special effects and the balloon alien and the salt shaker right now. But I'm open to it. I'm open to it. But the point is, you know, that has happened throughout many sci-fi series that I watch, where, you know, when you watch it in the beginning, you're like, what is this crap? You know, why do people make it? Why am folks getting excited about
it? Never this? Felt that way. I always love Christopher Eccleston.
Oh, I'm talking about all your fandom. Really always
cheesy and grinning, and then Rose with her pants.
Look at his ears, though.
I know. But I did the last one. What are we at? Episode 6 of the first season? That's where I am right now. I will watch the next one.
I told you
episode 15. Speaking of Doctor Who and that time period, did you recognize the character from Into Darkness?
Yeah.
Did you recognize the character?
No.
You didn't? There's an actor who you've seen a few times in that Doctor Who was in the film Star Trek Into Darkness.
I honestly have no idea. Who was it?
The black boyfriend.
Oh, who was he?
He was the guy. He was the father who was the.
Oh my god! He was the father who blew up all the people.
Yep. Oh. Yep.
Wow, he still had the same damn hair. The same.
Well.
Let it go. Let it go, Eric. Let it go. Yes, it was the same hair. You know, let it go.
Two fade is a number two fade, no matter what year it is.
But he has the same sideburns. God, that is not the same throughout.
A little grayer.
What now?
He had a little bit of gray.
Yeah.
A little bit of gray, so that makes it that much more shameful.
All sci-fi is the same, really. It's just all glommed together anyhow. I don't know why you get so excited.
Stephanie, until Christmas Invasion, and then I'll let you go. But if you're not hooked after Christmas Invasion, Eric, do you kind of agree with that?
Yeah, kind of. You shouldn't. Well, yeah.
I kind of took a little bit of offense with the pig aliens and the, like, big fat farting aliens. That was weird. Can you imagine the casting call? We're going to need you because you're fat. You're perfect. Like, that's horrible.
I could do 2 hours on that topic because it goes much deeper than
the skin. Oh my god, but it goes much deeper. Okay.
There's so much backstory to that, but this is neither the time or the place. But what I was going to say, though, is that... that's a whole bag of Doctor Who bag. But anyway, what I was gonna say though, if I flash back myself back to 2005, I will say I was very pessimistic. Well, not pessimistic, but I didn't want to get my hopes up about the new series and the revival of Doctor Who at the time, and because I was like, oh my gosh, how is this gonna work? I mean, being familiar with the way the old stuff was, I'm like, how is this gonna work? And quote unquote modern times, and watching those first episodes that you've just seen, I thought, oh, okay, I guess they'll have this season, but I don't know if they're going to continue. Like, I was like, can this sustain itself? Will this last? And I was not really feeling it, especially with that.
But then you went Into Darkness.
Oh, no, but especially that two-parter though, that Aliens of London and
World 3,
and I thought, oh no. If this is how it's gonna be, no. And then that episode Dalek came, and that was the first episode for me personally where I thought, this could work.
That's the first episode for me that I've actually thought, all right, I see a glimmer of why people watch the show.
Yeah,
that was the first episode.
That's what it was for me, and I thought, okay, this might work. They might be able to do another season if they can. Pull something else out of that. And I can't say, you know, much more than that about what you haven't seen yet.
But. I'm going to be honest with you people. I thought you guys are just crazy people, just liking the abuse. okay with the bad storylines and okay with the terrible special effects. And I thought, well, this is just a cult that has had too much Kool-Aid, and I don't know if I can manage to do it. Because you guys are like, push through the pain!
And you do have to do that with Dr. I'm sorry. I'm a new fan, but you do have to push through some crap. I'll tell you.
You gotta get to Christmas Invasion, no. And then after that, we'll have a discussion.
Listen, I said.
Oh my God, Eric, she's a newbie.
Yes. Ring the bell, everyone. We have another one.
I just find it very interesting that we're talking about this now, and we were just covering that same thing and the same issues with Star Trek, the Star Trek reboot, and look how successful the Doctor Who reboot was.
Nothing wrong with rebooting, especially if you're...
Well, they're saying in the same universe, so this is not a...
Exactly.
Yeah, it's not a full reboot, but...
Yeah.
Well, okay, fine, but there were many years off the air, many hardcore fans, a little skeptical, many new people came to the show, extremely skeptical.
As we all know... Those of us in the old Doctor Who club, it was a boys' club in the old days. There was no girls into the show, not because they were getting kept out. I guess the material was keeping them out. But since 2005, it's completely flipped.
Because Christopher Eccleston.
And building on 2005, it's remarkable because now the female fans probably outnumber the male fans now, and it was never like that. In the old days, never ever.
A lot of people. Matt Smith brought in a lot of girls. I mean, Tennant too.
Tennant. Oh yeah, of course, yes, of course. But
I'm
yeah,
actually not attracted to any of the doctors, so I guess I'm.
But you know, that's okay because you'll kind of love them, but not be attracted to them. Because like, I love David Tennant, but you know, I don't want to sleep with him or Matt Smith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say the reason why I had plenty of opportunities to get into Doctor Who earlier in my life.
Oh, I thought you were going to say sleep with Tennant. I was really going to ask the question.
I think everybody has an opportunity to sleep with Tennant.
No, I don't know. As a girl fan, I've had plenty of opportunities to see it in the past, and what turned me off is just the unbelievable cheese. Like, the scene. Jeez. I mean, at that point it was airing on my local PBS station, and dudes in their 50s, like friends of my dad, were super into it, and I just did not see any common ground at all. Like, at all. I had Star Wars, you know? Anyway.
Yeah.
But now I'm a little older. Now I have way more science fiction stories under my belt and a much greater appreciation for the genre. And yeah, I can embrace it. And
just wait. You're going to be
reluctantly right now, but I have a feeling I'm going to be and abused just like all of you.
I think just in a few more weeks, you'll be cosplaying and fanficking. You're going to be starting a Doctor Who dedicated Tumblr. I know.
A little plushy K9 on the side.
Yeah. Just wait.
I'm so excited for you.
No, because I don't really know anyone who's ever kind of like put in that initial time they had to put in, especially with the new series. I don't really know anyone who already had a predilection for genre, you know, television and or movies. I've never known anyone who put in the due diligence on the new series and to where it didn't stick. I haven't really come across that person yet. So,
well,
I think you'll be fine.
Just get to Christmas Invasion and then we'll talk.
Yeah, I think you'll be sold probably before Christmas Invasion, but it certainly should be solidified by then.
I don't have the same hatred towards Rose as obviously Kat and
Lynn, because when we
I
was
know,
the podcast,
I always feel weird. I felt weird defending Rose because Rose is no favorite of mine. But at the same time,
Well, see, I think the reason Kat has a problem with Rose is something you haven't seen yet. Okay, I will simply say Rose is persistent in the series. So while you're new to it, you may not notice it yet.
Yeah, but the bloom is not yet off of Rose.
Yeah. She,
oh my God, what does that mean?
Well done.
That's why I only get to be on this podcast sparingly.
Oh dear.
The only problem I have with Rose right now is her pants. Her pants are horrific and they need a change. But I'm not a big fan. I'm not attracted to Eccleston at all. And it's because one of the first few times I was exposed to him was 28 days later.
28 days later, yeah.
So that's who he is in my mind. It's like really hard for me to see him as this bumbling doctor. And that's another thing. I was not expecting this guy to make so many freaking mistakes and to be kind of like a dick. Totally like making all these mistakes, being completely ruled by one emotion or another, and then like being a dick to children, basically.
Wow. That's the doctor I know.
That is actually the doctor we know. That's true. Classic Who. You're like, why are the companions even hanging around this dude? Really?
Hartnell was cranky.
Yeah. Baker was rough on Sarah. So yeah.
That is rough. What is Hart. That about? I was not expecting that at all. I was expecting a super being that had 50,000 brains and a couple hearts. I was expecting somebody not acting like that. But it's growing on me.
Wow. Yay. So, okay. I think, you know, we're coming to a good stopping point unless anyone has anything else to say about Star Trek Into Darkness.
No colon.
Yeah, no colon. Yeah. No. Did anybody care about that? I kind of...
colon. What is it good for?
Yeah.
Cancer.
So positive.
I'm just looking forward to that Star Trek Star Wars crossover film we were talking about.
No,
really. It's the same thing, really. The fans don't care.
No,
it's the same
thing. I don't want to see that. What are you talking about? Why are y'all doing that?
You are misrepresenting what I said. Yeah. By a lot.
Yeah, I don't
Vorkon.
Know.
Vorkon, it's next. I'm telling you,
Vorkon. And that's our show, guys. We love your feedback. Go to our website, scifipartyline.com. Leave us a message there, or you can tweet us where Eric will tweet you back. He's here. Yay. We are on facebook.com/scifipartyline. We are on, what is that, Google+. And we are now on Stitcher. So if you have that app, you can listen to us there. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we will see you at the party next time. Live long and prosper.
And may the force be with you.
You make sense.
What is wrong with you?
Thank you.
What the heck?
I'm sorry. I tried to get Stephanie in because she's online, and I ended up hanging up, and I wanted to do it really smooth, and it just did not work
out. That was not smooth.
So let me add her to the call.
Okay, let's get Stephanie here. That was
just the opposite of smooth. And that Eric is gone, so that's not cool at all. But
Eric, that is great.
He's not here. He's gone.
He's probably still talking. He's like, oh, and the best part was, and he doesn't realize we're gone. Okay, wait, I hear something. Who's that?
Sounds like Stephanie.
What was it? My sniffing?
You have some sort of background noise. Let's see if I can hang up on Eric and perhaps call him back. Girl, I interrupted the whole podcast. I was just going to bring you in, and then I hung up on everybody, actually.
Right? I mean, a good point too.
I know he was just like, "Hello, Eric." Hey, sorry about that. See, I was trying to get Stephanie in, and then I'm hung up on everyone instead. So that happened.
Gentle transition. The listeners will never even. Never even. So I'm gonna jump back in my tirade. Do what you want, but so now it's convenient that Stephanie has joined us as well, because I was pointing out that in the release of the DVD for the Star Trek version,
End of line.